Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
And here we are for another week of the fifth and last NRL podcast. Hopefully things don't sound too bad. Not on my own computer and microphone tonight. Having some technical difficulties and currently awaiting a new setup that's been ordered. So hopefully it won't be an issue for more than a week. And also this week, obviously Tuesday night, right now as I am recording, Lewis doing a solo here. I'm going to go through round four review and preview of round five in the NRL. Hopefully next weekend, back to standard transmission. Box on Monday, Witty on Wednesday with the preview and the review. But for now, let's rip in and fingers crossed the sound quality is good enough. And to everybody out there, I hope you had a fantastic long weekend with friends and family. What a belting 5 days of rugby league it was. Fingers crossed we're up for the same come this weekend. But as always, this show is brought to you by bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the True Blue Bookie. Download the app today or visit the website. And Penrith Solar Centre, Jake and the crew there, 1800 20 29 30. Give them a bell or visit penrithsolar.com.au. The Elon of Penrith. And straight in with a Penrith Solace and a powerful moment of the round. It was in a losing side, but my God, that tackle by Tommy Dearden and the effort he put in, it was disappointing. It wasn't backed up by his teammates after that, an error straight away that led to a try, but he had no right to make that tackle from the other side of the field, chasing down a man like Selwyn Cobbo, but that just sums up Tommy Dearden. He had a couple of positive plays across the night, as he does, but he's all effort and that's a powerful moment that should lift your team, but unfortunately for him in this case, it didn't. But Tommy Dearden, every day of the week, if there's no Cherry Evans or there's no Munster, he's the first man I'm picking in the halves as a backup or a replacement in the six or the seven for Queensland. He's just an outstanding player. He's all effort, and that was a very powerful moment by him. But let's review the games from round four, and I don't know if it's been confirmed yet or not. I haven't read anything today. Paper-wise, and it's a bit late now, so I haven't Googled, but they were talking yesterday that the weekend was on track to be the highest attended round ever. And I think the record goes all the way back to 2011 or 2012. I heard yesterday on the radio, they said they needed 27,040 or something along those lines at the Parramatta game to break the highest ever attendance across the round, and looked like a fairly big crowd, so hopefully that was the case, and that record was broken. But round four in review kicked off with the Panthers up against the Roosters. And man, the Penrith Panthers, what can you say? It's a great result. They did what they always do. Just so consistent. They strangle. They dominate from the backfield. They kick well. They tee off with your line speed. They just put you in your own end. They force you into errors. They frustrate you. And if you're not willing to play them at their game and go punch for punch and or take a risk to get out of yardage, you just end up being drowned. And for them, it was a fantastic result. Liam Martin got injured early, to be missing Nat, to be missing Sorensen, to be missing Fisher-Harris. There was a point there in the end. It didn't end up like that. But the metres per set, per average, for about 60, 65 minutes for the Roosters went only 21 metres compared to 47. And when you have that, we just get what you talk about week on week with the Panthers. Set starting, they just get closer and closer to halfway and better field positions. And the way Dylan Edwards brings the ball back, or Brian Toto, Taruva, etc., they just start in such good field position, puts you in a position to put up attacking kicks, pin their opponent inside the 10-meter lines or in the corner cages, as we call them, and just tee off. And that's what they did all night. They made it almost impossible for a guy like Dom Young, especially, to have an influence on the set starts like he did in particular the week before. They made sure he caught everything and they bashed the absolute crap out of him. And the Roosters just didn't help themselves. They made poor errors, simple drops that weren't even under pressure. They got bogged down in their own end. They tried to play sideways without winning. and he played the ball speed, which is incredibly frustrating. And those simple errors, that just paid a price by the time, you know, things got to the back end there. And at halftime, 14-6 was a great result for them, considering to get that Sotili try. But second half, that shift, you know, was way too easy. I know the controversy that come out of it with the try, no try, and with that rule, and everyone's frustrated. I'm just as frustrated, because when there's grey in it, we get frustrated with different interpretations and it gets left open to it. But with the black and white, which is what they said it was going to be for the first few rounds, it seems like that was the case. But then suddenly the other night, we've applied discretion to one and not to the other. So it's got to be one or the other. We're never going to be happy 100% either way. This is the case with a lot of things over the years with football. But if they're going to go black and white, it has to be black and white. And if so, neither was a try. If they're going to apply discretion, both were tries. Lead runner got through on one. On the second one, I don't think he got through, but was he going to impact the play? No. So it's either a try for both or it's no try. It can't be one or the other. In terms of the scoreboard, definitely flattered the Roosters, considering what they put up across the 60, 70 minutes prior. And I think particularly that last 10 minutes was more frustrating to watch, because, yeah, some of it was garbage time, but the brand of football they played at the back end, actually playing direct off dummy half, getting deep into the line, trying to crash in and then roll off the back of it. They hit the halves a couple of times with back rows and got play the balls, and they found two tries. But they weren't willing to do that when it mattered. And it's getting real frustrating, the fluctuation and the up and down in their performance, which is, again, been a case the last couple of years. But they've showed us the tough side. They've showed us, you know, their ordinary side. Then the other night, they just weren't willing to engage, which is not going to be good enough if you want to compete with a team like Penrith. So Luke Keary particularly, really frustrating, just drifting across field, playing overs, giving ball to Manu without digging into the line. You know, blokes on the inside get released. There's three or four defenders there and he's just left in a cul-de-sac making magic when he comes back in field. But yeah, there wasn't many Roosters that stood out. I thought Joey had a few individual moments. Tedesco was okay. Nat Butcher, 67 tackles. And Terrell May, it's been their best middle so far this year. But for Penrith, Edwards and Yeo really, really stood up. Their back three, as always, like the wingers, just do their job. Taruva, To'o, Luai, good fatigue, like they like to do. They play through the middle. They play off their back three, but then they hit that back row and they drop players back under and they work over the middle and just drag you under. And then Schneider, big body, good kicking game, forced some dropouts, distributed, steered things around. He did a really good job as well. And what a night for the Gyre and Alexander clan, with Mav debuting and getting a run for that last 30 minutes there. Certainly no surprise to see the amount of attendance from MG and his crew. Massive turnout there and a great night for him. But Penrith, from strength to strength. A bit of concern about Martin's shoulder, but we'll see. But real positive signs again from the third half they've used in this iteration of having to replace Nathan or Jerome across the last few years, whether it be for injury, suspension, or rep football. And for the Roosters, back to the drawing board. Look at that last 5-10 minutes, what you did there. And that's what you should be doing. Got to get back to playing that hard style of football. You're not going to be able to play your way around Penrith when they've got you pinned inside your 20. You're either going to have to take a risk, or you're going to have to play direct and tough, hit halves and try and generate ruck speed somehow. Because when you've got none of it and you're kicking off the back foot and you've got two of the smallest legs in terms of kicking games in your halves, it's going to be a hard night. But we move on to South and the Dogs, and it's a win. That's about all I can say. They completed at 91%, 34 from 37. Thought it was a smart decision to put Kalama Tungi back on the right-hand side. Now they've got Jack on the left. I wish they would have done that when they had Ilias there. I know they didn't give him that extra week, but just simplifying things, balancing out their two edges in that regard. Playing off Murray a little bit through the middle, just playing some simple direct football with a simple tip, and Cook poked his nose out there a couple of times. That early football, which was very, very simple, paid dividends. Hit Kalama Tungi at a half, get a quick play of the ball. Murray plays short to Tom Burgess because the line's compressed. Do the same thing again not long after. Hit a half. Cam then goes out the back, links up when Jack gets early ball, and he gets a one-on-one with Karaz and does what he does best, crashes over. That good start, though, was taken away. Dogs, tough as they have been. Kickout gets really deep in the line, creates a beautiful two-on-one for Fox to dish back to Burton, and then the 40-20 followed up by Burton, and Taff comes up with a bit of backyard football for that chip for Connor. sort of give a bit of worry to South Sydney. And, you know, they should have gone in ahead, in all honesty. Morin, who had two nice drop plays where once he got cut short and the second time he drops it over the line, him and Curran made a great impact. But it just all started to go downhill after taking control. Could have been up by 18. Next minute, Fox gets KO'd in that sideline collision with the Trell. I know not everyone's happy with it. I think that one's just a football accident. You know, then early second half, the hammer drops when Jack gets to create that 2-on-1. They set up a try. Shaq has the head clash off the kickoff. Preston, HIA, along with him. That's a second player gone, along with Shaq. And it turns out then the tough bastard comes back on with a broken jaw. No idea how he passed his HIA. I know it's not correlated directly when you have an injury like that, but man, what a tough guy Preston is. And then Morin just adds on to that when he gets sin-binned for that lifting effort. And I know a lot of people weren't happy with the Jack Whiten near hip drop situation, and that got cleared. I sort of saw it, but a bit from afar. I was at a family sort of do, so I didn't get to go back and watch that, but a few moments there. But those particularly three back-to-back-to-back for the Bulldogs piles pressure on. The penalty goal, they get to go a bit further clear on back of that try and get the buffer. And then the Dogs, surprisingly, do very, very well. They don't give in. Do what they've done the first few weeks, show some good resilience. They hold with the sin bin. Kikau ends up with a no try. Salmon just kind of gets caught up. There's a repeat set, another repeat set. They get all that pressure, but they're just struggling through their halves. Like, obviously, that left-hand side is pretty elite when you've got Burton, Kikau, Critter. And then on the outside of it, they've had Tracy. This week it was Fox, and he flipped back over. That left edge is really something to work on. But in terms of the speed, the line engagement, and what you get from Hutchinson, he's good at steering things, he's good at controlling, he's good at kicking, but probably just not enough leg speed or dominance as a seven to sort of force teams to engage or hold for him to create space on the outside, which is why sort of surprised they haven't looked at Sexton yet. Haven't seen much of their cut football to see what sort of form he's in. Like I said, they've been really tough and resilient, but I think he can bring a little bit more of a point of difference in terms of the way he attacks, especially with his running game and creating that space. But they had ample opportunity at the end, couldn't take it, and you know, they got that real late try after there was the penalty tap to Critter, who takes that tap and gets himself down there, and they Burton throws up that bomb. But yeah, disappointing in the end, and I think most of it in the end went their way. I think I'd have to go back and look, but possession, I think they had 55% of possession, which is a huge difference when you think about it. In terms of South Sydney, you know, they completed very, very high, but they had less ball. I think the penalty count also was in favour for the Bulldogs. From memory, I'd have to quickly look that up. They won the penalty count in terms of ruck infringements, 6 against. It was 14-8, so a couple extras there. I know losing the players doesn't help, but the big killer was the errors. They had 12-5. So even with that, all that possession, that ball, there is some good signs there. There's some stuff to work with, but end of the day, when you get all those opportunities inside 20 and you can't bank points or your halves can't create, it's a tough slog. But Fox will be missing for a week. Preston, that's a big blow. 6 weeks for him. They're already light on in the forward side of things as well, but that just adds a little bit more pressure, and Morin's going to miss 2 weeks. So likely going to be a debutant or a little bit of change there, but we'll wait and see. Souths just needed to find a win. Plain and simple, and they got that. Murray was good. Jack, Kalamatangi, Cook, a bit better from him this week. And Tom, positive first stint from him. But for the Dogs, you know, Taff, Connor, Curran was good again. You know, Burton had that 40-20 and backed up one of those tries, but still like to see him a little bit more involved. But yeah, just got to work on what they do inside 20. Broncos, Cowboys, no Walsh, no Haas, no Piakura, derby game, awful weather. Carwell medal on the line. Expected a little bit more from the Cowboys side of things, but 3-0, no more. Reynolds kicking game in that weather. The chaos he caused at the back end of the field, like how poor they were in terms of kick defusal and just general play, like the amount of errors, it's It's a building habit you don't want to get into. And we've said this week on week on week. They can attack from anywhere. They've got great edges, good outside backs, powerful forwards, ability to offload, a running half, a running nine, a very creative fullback. But at the moment, they really do summarize what I remember of James Maloney, who's the attack coach now. Very much a threat, running the ball, passing the ball, offloading the ball, no risk, no reward, and happy to flush an error and come back straight for it despite an error. But defensively, at the moment, they just have complete disregard for the football. They put pressure on themselves. They don't defend well enough. Like inside shoulder miss from Tamalolo on the line. Two dummy half tries where guys just simple misses, not covering on the insides or closing in ruck space. Disconnection on edges. But they're like even at the back, your communication. Their bomb defusal or defusal of all the high kicks and some of the screamers that Reynolds put up, I think was like 36% compared to almost 90 on the flip side. And to be fair, the fact they got 20-12 at halftime was amazing. And sums up again, the tries that they did score, they can get you from absolutely anywhere on the field. Like, yeah, it's really frustrating at the moment with the Cowboys, but Reynolds, what a night with a boot. If it wasn't the higher ones, a couple of short kicks, set up two tries in that regard. The one through the line leading to Oates. The one where he pinpointed Staggs on the bounce and he takes it in one motion. The bombs were relentless. The errors he got out of Tarlungi, drink water, etc. Just had them at sixes and sevens in the poor conditions. Thought their pack really aimed up. Did a good job. Yeah, they were dangerous for the majority of the night. And it's a good win for them to bounce back considering the injuries they've had and a bit of the frustration. Pat Carrigan was excellent and won the Carl Webb medal, the inaugural one, which is a massive moment for any of those players knowing what he did for both those clubs and knowing who he was as a person and a player. And, you know, good night overall for the Bronx. But, yeah, if you're looking, you know, Saylor showed again his quality. Good fill in there for Walsh while he's out. Reynolds, certainly a welcome addition. The makeshift sort of pairing of Fletcher Baker and Jensen did a good job to start things off. And overall, everybody had a contribution. That did and cover tackle still for me was the highlight of the night. That was absolutely fantastic. But yeah, for the Cowboys, when your back five has a combined 13 errors and the way they defended, it's just not good enough. 16 errors, 60% completion rate, you're not going to win a game of football. And like I said, to be 20-12 at the point they were, they almost pulled a try out just after halftime at 20-18. There were a couple other moments where there was a loose ball or an opportunity and they just continue to make errors, but Tommy Dearden, very good again, never say die. Robson and Cotter got through a lot of work, but the devil's in the detail for them. If they're going to be so lackluster towards controlling the ball and only playing one side of the football, because like we said, don't get me wrong, they can score from anywhere, you're not going to beat that top-end talent because those top-end sides, they're not going to give you cheap football, they're not going to give you cheap points, they're not going to give you cheap possession. So if they're going to disrespect the football, if they're not going to defend, if they're going to make poor inside shoulder reads, dummy half tries, stand on your line, not tie in at marker and be disconnected on the edges, it's going to be a similar year. 12-12, borderline the eight, and they're going to go out the back door. So I think the harsh words from Peyton at this point in time, he's pretty much on the money and he's right to be frustrated. Dragons Manly, 20-12, both made plenty of errors, 15 errors apiece, but I think this was one of those weeks and you're going to get them from the Dragons while they're going through this sort of transition with Flanagan and what he's after and just the overall effort and attitude. We saw a great resilience week one. We saw two awful weeks defensively and offensively, but that resilience come back and that little bit of hoodoo that seems to exist at Wollongong for Manly, that has kept turning up. They absorbed long patches on their line, territory, possession, played off the back foot, and when they got their opportunities, not only they took them and they countered. But it was good to see a bit of grit there, and there was a lot of cover tackles, there was a lot of good efforts. You know, after Turbo sets up that try early with four or five guys on him and pops that pass back up, you're sort of thinking, oh, it might be a long day, but, you know, they grew frustrated. And with that frustration, moments from quality players, DCE, Hunt kicking that ball out, the ball over the sideline. Tommy makes five errors. It was all the high-quality players that were sort of the ones getting frustrated. But the Dragons at the back end sort of took control after being under the pump. And, you know, at 6-all when Bird got that gift try late on, you know, Ravalawa gets knocked out by Tommy. Sully has a no try from structure on a lead run. There's two missed opportunities, but Manly just stayed frustrated and kept making errors. And with the possession they did have, they finally flipped the field. And, you know, Kyle just holds up a pass there with a lead line, hits Sloan out the back, and Cherry, as he does at times, gets a bit itchy. He jumps in, takes him to 10-6, and then to close things out, Sewer just runs a nice, tough line at Brooks and Cooler out on that edge, and before you know it, it's 14-12 at halftime, and off the back foot, they've sort of punched up and found two tries there when they could have had a few more earlier, but second, it pretty much just started the same way. They absorbed for the majority of the half, come up with a save on Paulo with Ravalawa. There was a knock on that there when he gets his hand in between. It's a great effort there, and there was multiple other efforts that make Flanagan happy. But again, another counter off the back foot and that resilience that you're going to see across the year here and there. I know he'd love to see it week in, week out, but it's not going to be the case because it's a slow change in culture and habit and effort for the Dragons while he's there. But they countered off the back of a long period of possession, being off the back foot again. DeBellum, I think it was, had a really, really good run. Offload to Eisenhuth, and then Hunt comes up with a nice kick to Sloan, and you know that resilience turns to points one more time, and that's certainly something I'm sure he'll show this week. The try saves, the repeat efforts, just taking all that on board, and then the way they took that and used it against Manly, and they certainly did so there. But yeah, 20-6 there with 15 left. Manly really, really needed to get something. They got a six more, and then the old Ola Kawatu, who, you know, they crashed that play in plenty of times. It's pretty good one to have up your sleeve, don't get me wrong. I'd flog the hell out of it too, but I think he had 19, 20 touches on the day. They did a really good job controlling him, getting numbers in, but eventually you're going to break. He crashed his way over, but it was too little too late. And 20-12, they grind out a great win. I think the summary of this one in terms of the errors and defense and what happened for each team on each side was Flanagan's last tackle to force the error, and then everyone colliding into each other and falling over, pretty much summed up the day. Manly weren't as good defensively as what I expected. They were pretty gritty the first couple of weeks. We saw a little bit of a slide last week where they give up the 14-zip lead and went into their shells a little bit with the way they like to attack, and that's the risk-reward of playing that sort of brand of football. But over the weekend, a bit loose with the football, too many errors, and then just didn't really have the resilience defensively that their opposition had. So I guess that's something for them to work on, that if you're going to play that style and you're going to make errors, which is going to come with that football, you're going to have that resilience, and no more so than their opponent this week in the Penrith Panthers. So big test for them. But yeah, the Dragons, I think we're going to get weeks where they win like this, and then there's going to be weeks like the ones prior where they lose by 30 or 40 just in this process. But good night for Hunt. Sloan, Sewer back big in. DeBellum was good off the bench. You know, Zach had another good game. And just defensively as a team, some of their efforts, in particularly on that edge with DCE and Ola Kawatu coming at them, you know, like Lucci, Rava, there was a lot of guys that made a lot of plays, and as a whole, they defended very well. But for Manly, Ola Kawatu, plenty of touches, plenty of damage, but, you know, 200 plus metres, 19 touches, big band, but big engine. Paseka was pretty effective again, and Jake, plenty of defensive work, but yeah, back to the drawing board a little bit for them, just in terms of probably the balance of focus between their offense and their defense. And there's no doubt there's a lot of talent there and they can attack from anywhere on the field, but just a little bit more balance between the errors and then the way they defend those errors, I guess. The Dolphins, 34-8 over the Titans, insanity to me, at 10-0, finally coming into a game, putting a bit of pressure the other way. They got some repeats. They got a reward for that with the effort try for Jolla following through on a kick. Bostock makes an error because of their line speed and their kick pressure. We're seeing the stuff that Dez would really, really want to see. Foran and AJ link up to set up Semi, and there's a bit of life there. All the things you've been waiting for. You know, steady attack, high completions, better defensive effort. All the little things that Dez Hasler would be trying to ingrain, but it just flips on its head. And it happened again. It really, really did happen again. But the tap on play on the short side for Bostock was, you know, a bit of a wow moment that they got that try to happen at 10-6. But then when Plath gets put in the bin for that horrendous hip drop. You think they're going to consolidate here? Just go back to what they were doing before, putting pressure on, grinding them down, and they'll find points. But the complete opposite happens. They end up losing that period where they have the sin bin. The Dolphins just trap them there and then they get repeats, they chip away. Nichols goes close with a no try. Fifita comes up with the save. They get another repeat, a break right on the half, and then, you know, Hammer throws long again. They get him on that same edge. Bostock has four players coming for him. Shouldn't score, does. And they go in at 12-10 at the half, which really, really hurts considering what had happened. And then the second half was just all Dolphins. Kickoff out on the full at the start sums it up. They had a few little moments for Fida. Nice inside play with Campbell, which turned to an error. And they traded sets for a bit, but the Dolphins just got on top. Jesse Bromwich wound back the clock. That was one of the better stints of football I've seen from him in a while. He had that tip on to the right, punch one in and a half, and then off a quick play of the ball, just another short tip back at the post for Kerr to crash in. And Flegler was really, really dominant. Lots of destruction. Katoa had another great night, showing his wares, some of the deception, his ball playing, his pass selection, his kicking game. He's really coming along well. You can see why Wolf and the club were very, very keen to make sure they had him locked down long term. I think the deal, in all honesty, with the cap increase and his potential and what he's showing now, it just makes sense. He's got 1 year to go, probably about 350. 3 year extension, they're talking 2 million. So you're talking, you know, 650, a little under 700 over 3 years. Like, the best halves on the market are going to get 900 million bucks sort of range, like for your DCs, your Munsters, your Hughes, all those guys up at that range. So 20-year-old kid whose ceiling's only going up and up, and you have to pay a little bit for potential. I think for them, it's a good investment long-term because I think they've got a player. But yeah, he had his stamp on this game again. Good night for him. The ball that sort of set up that one with Flegler to offload to Hammer. Really, really nice play. Some positives for him and the way they combined. And it all ended with Sami getting one late off a penalty. But again, 30 unanswered points after the 10 at the start. They don't capitalize on the bin. And the Titans concede 30 again, miss 40 tackles, and have zero spark or resilience. And Des Hasler looked like he absolutely lost the plot on TV, and probably rightfully so. And the big question is, where do they go from here? They had a real positive start. They couldn't capitalize on it. Things obviously went backwards pretty quickly. And, you know, I'm still not sold on the selections and the way he's got things. It's too conservative. It suits him to a T. Solid half, you know, goal kicker, distributor, playing safe football, wants to complete higher, wants to defend well, wants to ramp things up in that regard. Hooker, who makes his tackles, dishes the ball, but I think Verrill should be getting more time. I think Brimson's wasted on the right edge. I don't think Tanner Boyd should be the seven. Should be Kieran Foran. You've got Campbell back there. He's got JoJo. He's got Lofie Carn-Pereira. He's got Smith Shields. He's got Shop. They're not the greatest defensively at centre at the moment, but I'd rather roll a couple of those guys in, along with Sami, who now unfortunately is injured for 3 weeks, and sort of make a back line up, but have my best players touching the ball. And that would be Foran at seven, AJ at six, Campbell at one, and as Fifita gets more minutes, he played off the bench. He's named there again this week. Get him in the back row, and that's another question he's still got. Like, he's got that clause coming up around 10. If Tino's ACL situation, the direction of where they're going and the talent they've gotten, you know, Foran can't keep playing forever. The half situation's not looking pretty. Fifita's still got a way out here. So it's a very interesting time for the Titans and for Des Hasler. And Tanner Boyd, rough night again. 8 missed tackles, rough week with the Dogs game, and kick out is coming after him. And overall, so far this year, hasn't been great in terms of the seven. But for the Dolphins, like I said, big ups all around, especially their kids like Bostock. Good bounce back after an early error. Flegler's been great so far. Katoa showing some really good signs. But Herbie, Hammer, Aitken's been good since he's been back in. Azarko's contributions again. And Jesse wound back the clock. So good win for the Dolphins heading into this week against the Titans. Bennett against Benji. Mentored him at the back end. Has been mentoring him a little bit along the way here with this journey he's on now. And Marshall King up against his brother Jeremy. So interesting. And I guess the only black eye out of the night is the sin bin of Plath and where that leads to. So, yeah, interesting to see where things go from here. But moving on, and the next one we've got here, the Warriors win over the Knights, which was pretty close, in all honesty. And it's another one of these games, early doors. Sheck back at one, Egan back in. You saw the instant difference that he made back around the ruck. Just opens things up. Accountability around those A and B defenders. They just got such a roll on. Pressure, and they were pinning Newcastle on their own end. The set finishes, bury a couple of times in those kick contests was an absolute nightmare. But early blow and a bit of pressure for them, which they responded very nicely. Metcalf, that broken tibia, I think they've confirmed now, which can be anywhere up to 4 to 6 months, depending on the recovery. So it could be season ending by the time he's ready to go. So real spanner in the works for a guy that was showing some great form early doors and only just re-signed. So tough run for him. The hamstring to miss the finals run last year, and then after a positive first few weeks, looks like a long-term injury. So a question mark there. But they responded in kind. Chanel, Harris, DeVita come on and did a good job. Johnson got more on the ball there. Roger couldn't have been any busier. Nice play. Getting some deception with Johnson to play on Gamble. Looked like they'll slide out. He plays short and crashes in for the first try. Sort of felt like the Sharks game again. Lots of dominance, lots of control, possession, but needed to turn it to points, and sort of felt a little bit better once Egan just goes clean through on Safidi and finds Chanel to get it to 12-0. But at the back end of the half, to concede the way they did, Frizzell off that grubber on play 5 hurts, and they finally got some possession and turned it to points at the back end, and then nearly scored again through Frizzell off a couple of kicks. But 12-6 at half time, I think if you're a Newcastle fan, you would have been stoked with that, because I thought it could have got ugly. But good resilience shown defensively, but sort of again just a struggle with their attack. Very stagnant, still trying to push the ball sideways or slow play the ball, is not winning probably enough in their middle. The only sort of time that things look real dominant or like something's really going to happen is when Frizz gets the ball on that right-hand edge. Like Paul Pierce has had some nice touches. They had to play Lucas in the centres this week with a Gagai injury. But yeah, still trying to force it, I think, to Ponga and Best off slow dead rucks and shifting sideways, and they've got inside pressure, which isn't helping. Changes at 9, they're trying to get Brayley back into the mix. Plays a bit differently to Phoenix. Second halves combination between Gamble and Cogger and the way they want to play there. And I think Elliott maybe as well, just the way he handles through 13, probably want him to run a bit more than he does pass. So a bit of frustration for them to be where they are so far with the one win. But yeah, this was a tough one, and they certainly had some chances. They tried to get themselves into it, but the second half, Johnson, Sheck get a bit on a roll, and it was really, really early that it hurt that Harris DeVita kick to Montoya, who almost AFL marked it to get it to 18-6. And Barry was close on a kick target again. It was clearly a tactic they wanted to go for on that right edge, and they got some repeats, they got some errors, sixes again, until Newcastle, similar deal, flipped it through Lucas on a touch through on a kick. They absorb a little bit, Jazz forces an error. Feels like their chances are gone. 2 points for a penalty not long after. Gets himself in a position to get it out to 20 points. And Ponga obviously gets Best late with a bit of a grubber. And he was very, very good in the first half in his contributions. But they did a good job keeping him a bit quiet in the second half. So tough win. We haven't seen a full 80 yet from the Warriors. But 2-2 feels a bit more correct, given the way I think they played their first two games. Like the Melbourne loss, after the way they played in that second half, was mind-blowing. The Sharks one was a bit worrying after the way they started, but could very easily be 4-0, but are now back to 2-2. But interesting to see the direction they take with the half situation now, knowing that it's such a long-term injury. So Tamari Martin, Harris DeVita certainly back in the mix there. Chance soon to come back. Like Roger was absolutely incredible at one. Is there a consideration there? You'd say no off the overall strength of the team to be able to have Roger at centre and still float around and get Chance back in. Probably stronger overall back line. Do I think he's a better one than Chance overall? Honestly, yeah, I do. But I think their back line would be stronger having both of them on the field, and with what they worked and built on last year, Chance was a big part of what they do, particularly on the shapes they run on their right-hand edge and his physical presence. So, yeah, Roger was good. Dallin, Montoya, Johnson, Egan. The pack's good every week. Barnett, Tohu, Fanua Blake, every time are excellent. Ponga and Frizzell, your two probably standouts on the flip. Best had a pretty good matchup against Berry. Paul Pierce, I always bloody mix up the last name, had a pretty good stint again, and looks like he's got some good signs about him. But Newcastle are starting to get in that territory again where, you know, going to keep chopping and changing. That was the worry. And can they get enough out of their forward pack? I think they're still under-delivering a little bit right now, but a third halves pairing's coming up already. They're now going Cogger to Hastings, Gamble out of the mix. Brayley's been named to start, so we're changing the nine position. If this goes on for too long and they don't find the balance with the way they want to play, it's going to be too late for Newcastle. But Sharks, Raiders, the prison, the Bermuda Triangle, call it whatever you want to call it, it happened again. Both teams were awful for the first 10 minutes. The amount of errors between the two of them, just and in perfect conditions, was even more surprising. But Cronulla short on middles. You thought Canberra might just try to grind him out, hold the ball, play through, complete high kick, and try and do a job on that back five, which is so strong. But yeah, they weren't giving either of them any chances to fatigue, and the errors just threw everything out until Canberra got a bit of a roll on. Savage got a bit of a half break from a scoot and a beautiful play five. Fogarty sums things up. They go for the hands. Tomoko, him, Schiller ends up being the beneficiary. Hosking as well. 6-0, and then they have a really good little period there. Xavier Savage just drifts off the scrum and stands up the Jesse Raymond, and the inside defenders slide off. It's 12-0, and Rapana felt like things might change with an opportunity. 40-20 error, but Fogarty returns instantly. Levi on the post sees Kennedy sort of step forward and scores, and I thought he dropped the ball, but mind you, later on Eero drops, so it was sort of one apiece. At least it evened out. But 18-0 from the way it started, for the cleanup and the control of things in that 15 minutes, to then surrender it the way they did in a similar sort of period of 12 or 13 minutes to give it back to Cronulla was just insane. And it set a tone for them to go into the half with their heads up and a bit of blood in the water, no pun intended. But yeah, like Trindle just drifting across field and getting on the outside of Hosking, and Fogarty not biting on his inside, made them come off errors. And you know, then Mulatalo, they just get the ball sort of on the outside of Schiller, who tried to come infield and check release, which he did a pretty good job, but Mulatalo, classy finisher. And the Brayley kick try really summed up everything. That one, you see him sort of swear like it was a miss kick. It's not cleaned up. The effort from Katoa to get there and throw it infield, and there was three or four Cronulla jerseys around that loose ball and no Canberra in sight. So I think that would have made Ricky Stewart as angry as anything. And 18-all at halftime. The second half was just insane.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Injury for him, and hence his blow up at the end of the game. I think one of the journos tried to wrap a player, and he said that you don't give credit where it's not deserved. Basically, they were all embarrassing. So, very blunt assessment by Ricky, but yeah, not happy and rightfully so. But second half, it continued. They sort of traded sets for 20 minutes, and there was errors and penalties again. But Trindle hits that one short to Ira, who was a drop, but again, even out with Levi. Poor defensively, though, and the territory that they had, that play five short side grower in that sort of space to get a try out of that was tough. Canberra were just getting rolled. You know, and they're lucky not to be down further. Nico touches the ball that comes off Mulatalo. If he lets him regather, it's another try. The Atkinson no try off an escort. Rapana gave him a sniff of hope when he threw that long ball to Schiller when they got their first opportunity, but the missed kick from the sideline left it at 8, and Katoa right at the death when they go through the hands, ices it 36-22. So They put in a formal complaint, apparently, about, I think it was Holdsworth in the blue shirt coming across the kicker and the timing of it. But overall, I think Ricky pretty much summed it up with his words about how angry he was and disappointing. So, yeah, first week, you could say they probably lacked that energy and effort, particularly in their defense and the way they've been using their line speed and winning that way. But big win for the Sharks. Cam McInnes led from the front. He was awesome. Halves were good. Trindle, a few better moments from him in attack. Nico, solid overall game with control. Mully was good. Jack Williams off the bench. The centres were good. Brayley, for Canberra, no surprise, the standout almost every week. Tarpany had another good stint. Schiller, good introduction back into the NRL, but not much else positive in that regard for them. And the last game was one that I can't believe, again, the result. Tigers 17-16, no Moses, no Cartwright. They rolled hands onto the bench, changed the way they like to start things. But early on, that Stefano set the tone and the play the ball he got, which led to the Galvin grabber for Ollam at 6-0. They came to play. Harper's no try, but Eels just flipped things over and possession, territory, absolute dominance there. And the possession finally paid off when Gutherson come up with an offload with Harper to get to Sivo on that left-hand side. And, you know, they would have been very disappointed if they didn't get much more out of that, because the Tigers just would not go away. And it's really, really good to see that change, in particular the last 2 weeks after what we saw in Canberra, where it looked like it's going to be another year of them just copping big scores and having no heart and no resilience defensively. But this win, again, was built off the back of exactly that. Resilience, you know, defense and a great attitude. And they're things we haven't associated with the Tigers a lot in recent times, and it's a really, really good start, and hopefully they can build on it. But yeah, Parra with all that ball should have probably banked more, but they were a bit frustrated. They were frantic with their fifth plays. Gutherson obviously tried to help out a bit with the ball playing and the kicking, and they tried to take some pressure off Talungi, but at times pushed it a bit too sideways. Probably should have leaned more into where I thought they had an advantage, which was their middles. But to go in at half 6-6 when the Eels had 30-plus tackles inside 20 and controlled everything, that was a huge win for the Tigers. And the battle between Galvin and Blaze was great to see. But early on, felt like Parramatta may have had an opportunity to break things open, and they might have felt that way. The inside shoulder of Arpey when Hopgood just throws a dummy and links up with Gusson to get to 12-6. You're thinking, all right, maybe a bit of that has paid from, you know, juicing them with all that possession. The error Tigers get from the Talungi bomb, they get more pressure on, and then the hip drop happens. That's the big pivotal moment where I'm sitting there going, 30 minutes left, sin bin, penalty goal to 14-6, 2 scored. They're going to move in for the kill here, but the Tigers, to their credit again, just to hold and survive. And off the back of that, you know, Caesar's kicking game, the control, Galvin coming back out and bouncing back. You know, Caesar comes up with a beautiful wraparound play and throws a long ball to Ollam to strip into 14-12. They continue to play off their defense and turn up with their middles, led by Stefano, who had a really, really good day. The other guys like Bolle and that did a good job as well. And the attitude defensively certainly been cranked up now. They've got Ollam out there with Bateman, etc. A few more guys with some physical presence to sort of lead in that regard, and Arpey, who leads on all fronts in attack and defense, his manipulation outstanding. But Galvin responds in a huge moment for a kid off the back of him, you know, being sin bin and his team going behind, comes off just a nice bit of back of shape, gets a drift line on the outside of Blaze and gets on the inside of Penasini. But the no look pass to Buller, it's multiple weeks now where we've seen a link early between him and Buller. And long term, if you're a Tigers fan, again, that's got to excite you. Because if you're seeing that within 3 games, I can only imagine what it's going to look like in a few years' time. Even if he's not playing in the halves, if he turns into a big ball running back row, still be able to link up with him, still be able to contribute on an edge. But man, for an 18-year-old, every so often one comes along, just has no fear and fits like a glove. And he's just ascended to this level really, really quick. But yeah, there was a penalty late that they challenged, which got things to 16-16. Who was going to be the one to ice the moment? You thought for Parramatta, this is your moment to use your middles, kick down the front door, get down the other end. But they run the ball on the fifth tackle, give up possession in good territory, and give the Tigers an opportunity. And as ugly as it was, season nails it. And then a penalty on full time gives the Tigers a massively nervous wait, but well-deserved win after Gutherson misses. And yeah, they lost the meters, they lost territory, they lost possession. Penalties, you know, 13-4 against and a sin bin. You could not sum things up more for the Tigers in all those regards. That is resilience, that is heart, that is toughness, that's defense. And if you have that, you know, you can build on the rest of it with Arpi, with Galvin, with Buller. Some of these forwards doing a job. Fainu, I thought, was good again, along with a couple of those other guys already mentioned. You know, they're going to get Toll back, probably strengthen up that spot where Fatape is. I dare say he would be a miss when that time comes. But it's good building blocks so far for Benji and the Tigers. And I guess for the Eels, they're left with a bigger question. It's 8 to 10 weeks, and I said it last week, I'd want to get that halves combination sorted, be happy with it and stick with it. Because if you're going to chop and change week in, week out, you're not going to find any consistency. Dylan Brown, I think, is only going to get better as the weeks come. Yeah, could they finish things a little bit better? Set-wise, yep. Could they have probably been a little less frantic? Yep. But what are your options? Arcee is a ball-running six. Blaze is a ball-running six. He's a ball-running six. Hands is a converted half to a nine who used to be a seven. They could push Gutherson up, but again, another ball runner to help out. And then you'd have to put someone at one, whether that is Blaze, again, in that position. They used him in the trials. But the glaring one there is Ethan Sanders. And everyone knows about him. There's been a lot of talk about him that he's heading elsewhere, which is maybe a reason they won't look at him, or they sort of know that he's on the out there and they don't want to probably help with his development in that regard. But if they wanted a genuine seven to come in and they wanted to play the kid, they could, but probably knowing the fact that they signed both their halves long-term and he's probably going to go somewhere else, they probably don't want to do that, but it's a decision for them to make because they're, again, what we said, minimum 8 weeks for Moses, could be 10 to 12. So it's either that or, I'd keep watering the Blaze Talungi situation. He's going to play for you long-term. Are they run-centric? Yep, they are run-centric, but it's week one of that combination. I think Arthur summed it up in the sense that he said they just wanted a soft win. You know, they took some easy options and they didn't play as tough or through the middle as much as they probably could have. And he didn't take away from the Tigers at all in that regard. But yeah, I think they're going to have a bit of a change in attitude there. So I'd be sticking with the Blaze thing at least for another 2 weeks, go 3 weeks. And if you've, you know, lost three games in a row there, then maybe they have to consider reshuffle. But if he's in their long-term plans, and I'm sure he will be, for now you're gonna have to buy into that run-centric style, and Brown probably just has to, you know, be a bit smarter about where sets finish and moments like running the ball play five at the end of a set. But Gutherson was good, Hop good, Lane got plenty of ball, Campbell Gillard, etc. Penasini great in attack, but he was pretty poor defensively. But for the Tigers, Galvin, couple of huge moments. Thought Stefano, after saying only a couple of weeks ago he needs to step up, has really stepped up the last few weeks. Arpy's good again. Caesar's kicking game. Olam, great moments overall for the Tigers, and some real hope for some fans who have been waiting, wishing, and just, you know, hoping to have something to look forward to over time. But we'll jump in now and preview Round 5, thanks to bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the True Blue Bookie. And the first game kicks off Storm Broncos, Amy Park, Thursday night. The return of Munster and Hughes, the Australian 6, New Zealand halfback. Bloor retains his spot in the back row. Chan not available yet through injury. Still no Nelson, still no Sua. Welch back on the bench with Moroa, McDonald, and Wishart is Mr. Fix-It still. So a few changes there, mostly the massive positive of getting their halves back after Pezzett was pretty good for 3 weeks in the filling in position. For the Broncos, still no Walsh, still no Haas, no Pierre Kura. The only change, Willison off the bench, and the debut of young Bentakura, the big man who comes onto the bench. Xavier Willison suffered a knock at training apparently, so big week this week for a huge human being. It would have been nice and a bit ironic to see Takura come up against Nelson, because I don't remember quite, but I think they said he might be even taller than Nelson. So he was the biggest man in the NRL, possibly not anymore, but always ding-dong battles between the Storm and the Broncos. For me here, Brisbane last week, they're going to have to look to do what they did again. Kick and control through Reynolds. Really try and ramp up with that line speed and that pressure. Probably not going to be wet weather, but it can be a bit dewy down in Melbourne, so you won't have to do a job there. But I think naturally the question is the rust of Munster's first game. Hughes back in, Pappenhausen playing together for the first time. Can they hold to their pack? Can they be consistent? And can they fire an attack? Pappenhausen certainly showed he hasn't lost anything and is building nicely. Harry's been a bit quiet, but that's mainly because they've played off the back foot. I think the majority of the games they've been in so far. But Hughes and Munster are huge ins and interesting to see how they go. But looking at this one, leaning towards Melbourne at home, probably looking again for maybe a little bit of revenge for the big loss in the semi-final last year, and without Haas and without Walsh, big opportunity. But I think this will be a game either team by less than 12.5. And if I was going to look at a try scorer, Pappy, if he's over $2, he's always good value. And the other one there would be Jerome Hughes. I think Jerome Hughes on that right side with Katoa, one of those two, that sort of combo at the MAM Hunt spot would probably be where I'm looking. But with bluebet.com.au, the Storm, $1.43 favorite, Broncos, $2.85. You can get Pappenhausen at $2.25. Pretty good odds there. Anything over $2 for him. Alessia Katoa, $4. Pretty good odds for him. Nothing for Hughes listed just yet. So maybe they're keeping an eye on him health-wise. For the Broncos side of things, where they like to attack, I think they've been good pretty much on both averages. But Mariner's been good value so far. 237, Cobb up 350. Probably should have had one last week. They're probably the sort of threats you're looking at on return. But good game of football to kick things off on Thursday. Second game, 6 p.m. Friday, Dogs versus the Roosters, and a swag of changes at the 6 p.m. slot for the Dogs. Wilson back in on the wing with Fox missing. Sam Hughes in to start in the front row. Josh Curran comes in to start in the back row. Harrison Edwards onto the bench along with Kitiona Katonga for his debut. Mainly plays back row, but he'll probably have to play front row a little bit in this one, the Fijian international. Preston obviously missing 6 weeks, they're saying, with that broken jaw. Fox at least a week, and Moran suspended for two. But for the Roosters, the only change, Lindsay Collins returns. Terrell May goes back to the bench. Egan Butcher drops out. Crichton will start the back row, and Satili will revert back to the bench. But again, we'll be looking for a response off the back of a disappointing result. Poor ball control and just overall, you know, not playing tough. They now get the Dogs, multiple injuries off a couple of tough efforts. This is one where they have to drop the hammer. They've got a massive advantage, in my opinion, with a pack. You've got Jared, you've got Terrell, you've got Collins, Angus's stints, you know, the last couple of weeks, his last 10 minutes last week, Nafahu White. Satili, if they're just going to make him play simple and through the middle and bring leg speed, they should really bust up the middle. And if they do that, I think there's a bit of value in somebody like the Cheese, who in the games they've dominated so far and been able to roll, he's been able to jump out and be a threat. Joey Manu, to me, he's a threat every single week. If Crichton's back on the left hedge, that's a hell of a matchup to watch. But if they bust up the middle and get some space, he'll be a danger with Dom Young on that side to look out for. But Crichton was running some real tidy lines last week. He's one, I think, who's looking to prove a point last year. His deal could be some value. He's at 450 with bluebet.com.au. You got Manu at 275. And in terms of getting Brandon Smith, you get $5 for the Cheese if they can bust up the middle. But I like the Roosters in this one just to win. They're a $1.27 favorite with bluebet.com.au. The Dogs, 375. I don't think I'd mess with the points. It's a 10.5 start. But with those guys missing, big night for Katonga to debut. Massive achievement. But yeah, been a bit light on. If the Roosters take advantage, nothing would surprise me with what could happen in that matchup. But moving on to another important matchup and someone who needs to respond, it's the Knights at home Friday night, 8 p.m. up against the Dragons. Dan Gagai's back in the centres. Dylan Lucas drops to 18th man. Cogger moves to 6. Hastings back in at the 7. And out of the side goes Gamble. It's the third iteration of the halves combo. Leo Thompson back in the front row. Daniel Saifidi back to the bench. Jaden Brayley starts for the first time, so a new 9 combo. Pierce Paul on the edge with Frizz. Elliott at 13. Crossland to the bench with Hetherington and Croker. Something's got to give this week for them. And for the Dragons, just one change. Saleh goes to the reserves. Not sure if that's due to that hamstring that he was missing for a little bit. He needs a bit more time, but he pushes out for Michael Muller to come back in. That's the only change for the Dragons. This one is certainly a danger game. I think Newcastle need the win at home against an opposition who's been hot and cold. They had a really good week, two bad weeks, a good week again, following that pattern. If they can get some possession, control things, and stick it to them early and try and get some points, that home crowd is a hell of a thing to overcome. But the Dragons, if the best version shows up like last week's, resilient, strong through their back five, in particular through Lomax, Sully, Bird, Ravalawa carrying, and then they just defend the way they did and absorbed and responded off the back with the quality of Hunt and Sloan, this could be a real, real dogfight. But I'd lean towards Newcastle. I think something has to give. I never feel comfortable when it's a third halves combination change. I don't feel comfortable with the way they're attacking. I don't think they're winning enough play the balls to shift the way they do. But if there's a week to turn up and respond in front of your home crowd, this is it, especially through your forward pack. Thompson's a good in. It's time for the Saifidi brothers to ramp things back up, because at the moment I'd say Frizzell is the man in terms of dominance, and need to bust things up to get some opportunity for Ponga. So I lean slightly that way. The odds of bluebet.com.au, $1.43 for the Knights, $2.85 the Dragons. Honestly, I think the Dragons are much better value. So if you've got any inkling on the Dragons, I'd take the $2.85. 7.5 starts, pretty good. I'd probably take that myself out to 10.5 or 12.5 and see what you can get. Sloan, I don't think there's a bad week to back him, especially if he's over $2. He's $2.87 here. He's the real sort of strike. Lomax has been scoring on his edge at 262, but Sloan at almost 290 with Bluebet. It just takes one moment. He can be out of the game for the majority of it. He only needs one opportunity to sniff out a try, and he can absolutely find it. This is another one where I think you could take either team by less than 12.5, the old margin type bet there. And then the sneaky value, he's just been so dangerous. I think it's Frizz, $4.50 on that right edge. They did a really good job defending Olakau'atu there last week, but it's been a point of focus so far for them with him there. So wouldn't surprise me to see Frizz crash over again. He's chasing kicks, he's running good lines, he's overall doing a good job. But yeah, we move on from that one. Saturday kicks off, the early one. Souths, huge game for them off the back of that win at home at Acor, up against the Warriors, and changes galore again. Johnston injured, Shaq injured. So Isaac Thompson comes back on the wing. You've got Kepi returning to the bench. Hawkins retains his spot. So a couple of force changes otherwise. And for the Warriors, huge in. Chan's back at one. Allows Roger to go back to center. They've gone with Tamari Martin for the long-term thought, first up with Johnson. So Harris DeVita is back into the reserves. Murata Neokoro is coming to the back row for Katewell, who had a HIA and has missed out. Tom Ale is back on the bench with Bunty and Jazz Tavunga. So it's still a very, very strong side, but interesting to see how Martin plays. Haven't seen them in Cup so far this year. But Harris DeVita has been preferred for that bench role with a versatility, big body. Can play 1, 13, 9 halves, but genuine half slash fullback and more of an attacking threat. They clearly think they might get a little bit more out of Tamari Martin on the long term and probably want a bit more balance, I guess, now with Chance back at the back being less of a ball playing threat, but that big body. So big week for him. And Roger back to the centres, but game 200, huge for him. So see how they respond here. I think this is very dangerous for the Warriors. They completed high last week, but I still didn't think they dominated the middle. They were outdone in terms of possession and control by a team that you wouldn't have expected them to beat up on. This is not a forward pack that I can see them beating up on. Not Adden, not Barnett, not Tohu. You know, to have Murata back in the mix starting forwards being good, and if Egan's playing with Chance back in, there might be a little bit of ring rust, but I really think the Warriors will be able to bust them up the middle, so I'm looking at that right edge. If things get back firing nice and early with Chance swinging around, him, Dallin and Johnson were red hot last year. Interested to see how they link up with the left side with Roger. I like him in game 200. As a good chance there to maybe find himself a meat pie. But overall, the head-to-head with bluebet.com.au, they're $1.77, the Warriors, $2.05, South Sydney. Dallin is $1.80 if you like him to score. Roger in his 200th is $2.87. Others on the right, Berry obviously last week, $4. Was very, very, very busy. Ford on the left has gone close and he scored a couple of times. He's going to Hawkins at $4.50, probably not bad value there. Fanua Blake has been the one who's just been posting him up week after week after week. Very, very short for a front rower, but if you want a bit of value the other way, the man who's been playing good football, I think, is Kalama Tungi. It's more been getting play the balls and doing a job for him in that regard. But him back on the left-hand side, Martin back in for the first time, could he maybe find something there to attack? I don't know, but at $4.33, that'll all depend on whether they can get some opportunities in good ball. But he's probably the one there. But the man who really needs to lift this week is Latrell. If there's ever a time they need something from the backfield, I think Jack's done a good job chipping in there. It's going to be big with Thompson back in, being a bigger body. Him, Latrell, Jack, Tash, just making sure they're getting a good start from the backfield, because it's going to be a real uphill battle, I think, for the middles of the South Sydney side here. This Warriors forward pack, certainly no joke. We move on to Manly up against the Panthers, 5:30 at Brookie, or Four Pines as it's known now. No changes for Manly. Settled lineup, and Daly Cherry Evans will become the all-time games leader with 310 for the Seagulls, surpassing the great Cliffy Lyons. Matt Lodge returned to full team training this week. They reckon he'll be good to go in a few weeks' time, so another option for their bench. For the Panthers, massive in. Fisher Harris returns from injury alongside Moses, so the front row, Bash Brothers reunited. Maverick, after his debut, is the man to make way. Schneider holds the seven again. So with that being said, Manly have to respond to everything from last week. They're back at home. They made a lot of errors. They were a bit fragile on the edges at the time, and they didn't have the resilience to back up those errors like the Dragons did. If any of those things happen this weekend, Penrith will take advantage. They did it against the Roosters. If you give them cheap ball, they don't need much to get field position, to get territory. Still want to see that element of risk, the way they've been playing, particularly out of yardage, trying to spread early and get it to the edges. Guys like Cooler and that. It's a good thing against Penrith to see if you can break them open and get a play the ball to roll off the back of. Because if you don't have that point of difference in yardage, they'll just try and strangle you. So I think this is going to be a tight game. That in of Fisher-Harris is huge, but Manly at home should be a bumper crowd for Cherry Evans. You'd think the team would want to lift and respond after last week for him. So again, I like this one, either team, probably less than 12. If I was going to go a bit of value, I like either team 1 to 12, just head-to-head if you like it that way. But with Bluebet, .com.au, Panthers $1.62 favorite, $2.30 for Manly, 3.5 is the start. 1-12 Manly, $3.45, $3.25 for the Panthers. Try scoring value, Taruva $2, Tungo on that edge $2.50. They're both been very, very dangerous. It's been the go-to edge so far this year. It's also the side of the field where they had a bit of love a couple of times for the Dragons, so wouldn't be surprised to see them got Brooks and Cooler again. The flip side of it's Ola Kawatu. He's almost a go-to every single week, regardless of who they're playing, just because of what a physical specimen is, and if he gets a one-on-one, and the fact that, you know, it's Luai over that side of the field for him. If they can win a couple of playables or get Tom sweeping or get Cherry over there and dig in the line and get a one-on-one, that matchup again with him in any half is very, very tough for him in any back row. Garner defends quite low and tries to get under. He's going to need to have his wherewithal about him, because generally you need bodies in to stop the ball there. So Ola Kawatu at $3.75, not too bad a value, but the real cheeky one at home. Cherry Evans loves a support try, a kick try, or just pushing through on something. Could be pushing through on Tom, pushing through on a line break from somebody else, but $5 in his 310th game to take that record at home. Bit of value, but I think I'll stick with the Panthers, but danger at Brookie. Big night. You'd like to think they'd lift for the occasion, but time will tell. Saturday night closes out. Dolphins up against the Tigers. For the Dolphins, Plath obviously suspended for 2 games. Stone moves in to start at lock. Kenny Bromwich joins the bench, and that's the only changes there. For the Tigers, Jaden Sullivan gets his first crack since round one or round two for them, but their first game in the halves, with Galvin copping a 2-game ban for his hip drop. Latu Fainu gets his debut off the bench, the young half, while Twa returns to replace Kapoa. Latu Fainu, really, really talented player, very natural ball runner, learning more and more in terms of his ball playing and his kicking and all the rest of it, but very naturally talented runner of the football. There's a high probability prior to the Luai thing when they had him and Galvin, where I thought, well, maybe in a couple of years with some development, two of the best young halves there, how's this going to play out? But opportunity off the bench. What sort of time he plays, I don't know. Is there a late change for Sullivan? Does he plan to do similar again, where Sullivan maybe goes to 9, or he sees how it goes like round one and had that Caesar sort of option there? Latu played a little bit of 9 when needed for Tonga when they went away on tour, but huge week for him and his brother, Samuela. They played together for the New South Wales 19s together, but this road trip, this is going to be another ripper game at Suncorp. Benji up against his mentor, Wayne, up against his brother, Jeremy Marshall King. They're a high completion, tough sort of resilient team, much like what Benji's trying to build at the Tigers here. So it's another great arm wrestle, honestly. And another one where I look at it and think, you know, could be either team by less than 12.5. But with bluebet.com.au, they sponsor the Dolphins, and the Dolphins are the favourites at $1.55. The Tigers, $2.45. The Hammer, $2. No surprise. Bostock, $2.10. Both been in really good try-scoring form so far. Herbie up against Ollum. If he tries to jam him, he's got the class there at $2.75. Good possibility. Buller at $2.75. He's been a threat so far. Ollum got a double on the weekend, $3.25. They're probably sort of the main suspects, I think, you're floating around. In terms of a bit of value, if you're going to go somewhere, there's a couple of guys that have looked pretty dangerous, I think, so far. And you know, this might be a week where you see one of the edges get over up against one of these halves. So, you know, Nikarima, if he gets posted up, could they isolate him? Could they do some damage from the middle? Not too sure. But this one, I think, is going to be a real, real arm wrestle. Real, real grind. Both the 9s are good value, I think, here for a show and go. You've got Marshall King at $5, who likes to use his craft. RP at $4.33. Dolphins, you know, Jesse and a couple of those guys, a bit older, not the most mobile. Kerr, when he gets on the field, could he sneak one? But yeah, slightly towards the Dolphins, but another really, really close game. And 4.5 is the line there. But moving on to Sunday to close things out. Rough one, this one. Titans up against the Cowboys, 4 p.m. in North Queensland. No changes. Granville's 200th game for the club. He's coming off the bench. And Kyle Felt, I think he only needs one more try to take that all-time record for the Cows. But for the Titans, Jojo Fifita and Harley Smith-Shields come onto the wings. Sami is going to be out for 3 to 4 weeks. Lofi Khan-Pereira was dropped. Fifita still off the bench after getting 50 minutes out last week. And Isaac Liu, HIA, he's going to miss. So Jolliffe moves to prop. Clark goes to lock. And Josiah Pahulu is called onto the interchange bench with Palacea out. More players missing, more pressure on their middle. The changes to the back line, again, like Sami through injury, but Lofi Khan-Pereira was outstanding for him last year. I don't know his impact or what he's really done wrong given the way they've been playing. Still think the Brimson move for Tanner would have been a better idea. And looking at their bench, they've got Thomas Weaver there. Lofi Khan is still there. Could there be a change? I don't know. Tony Francis also, big-bodied winger, good yardage player. Somebody I thought they might have looked at if they're lacking for a bit for yardage. But yeah, with those changes, as disappointing as what the Cowboys have been defensively, they can attack. And the Titans are still leaking. They've showed minimal resilience, 30 points each game basically so far, 40 missed tackles each game so far. The Cowboys may be loose, but they can attack. And it worries me for the Titans with what they've got there to find points, let alone hold on. And bluebet.com.au agrees the Cowboys huge favourites, $1.13, $6 the Titans, 16.5 is the lineup. It's very rough considering. But yeah, going off the last couple of weeks, you'd like to see a response, but the bookies and plenty of others agree that they don't think they're going to see one. And that's a genuine worry. This is a game where you've got multiple picks for the way things are going, in all honesty. It's really, really troubling to think where this could go. I think they're going to hammer Boyd again. It's going to be a real, real pin-up. Dolphins got particularly their left-hand side, the right-hand side for the Cowboys side of things. Tommy Dearden has been having a field day down there running. He's 275. Drinky's been popping up. Val Holmes is on that side of the field. Fine Fuiaki got one week before, was a bit quieter. The week just gone, but yeah, they're certainly a threat both sides of the field and through the middle. And this is another one where if you're not tight around the ruck, which they haven't been, Robson, $4.50 is good value. But yeah, I worry a little bit about this week. I'd like to see something, but both back rows, did and late, like there's a multitude of guys I'm interested in, but the odds, $1.13, $6, blue bet. There's not much for the Titans that excites me. If anything, you know, unless there's errors and a complete meltdown again, they might be able to pop them a couple of times on the edges, Campbell, Brimson, etc. again, but Cowboys at home, awful week, we'll need a response. That's where I'm leaning. And the round closes out, Raiders at home. End of daylight savings. Should be a cold Sunday night at GIO up against the Eels. Just one change for them. Arta Mariota comes in to start in the back row. Hosking out with concussion. Simi Sasungi has been awesome in cup. Comes in for his first game for the Raiders off the bench. Whitehead still out with that calf injury that he re-injured over the weekend. Bailey Simonson's recalled into the centres. Morgan Harper out. Bryce Cartwright still out with that rib injury. Weir McGregor back on the bench to beef things up. And Hands out of the side after they carried him last week. And just another one where everything that Arthur said is going to have to come into play this week. About not taking soft options. Wanting to be tough. Wanting to get the points the hard way. And you know, get tough wins because every 2 points counts. Going to Canberra. Off the back of the way they played last week. Ricky's rage. I'm sure he's going to get a response. Big home crowd, I'd be assuming, coming in. Lower grades on beforehand who have been doing very, very well. It's a big matchup. And there's a few spots here. Like Penasini, like I said, he didn't have the greatest of weeks defensively last week. He's not up against Tomoko, but those two are both big attacking weapons for their teams. That's going to be interesting to see how both right centers go. The halves again, interesting to see how Brown goes this week with Talungi. Another week on, a few more training sessions, a bit of video, a bit of something to build off. Expect him to be probing away on that left-hand edge, trying to pick on Fogarty, trying to hit that spot there with Mariota like they did on the weekend, seeing what Trindle got a couple of times through Iro. And obviously himself finding a lane there. So I expect Brown to be pushing there with Lane and Gutherson trying to open things up on their left-hand side. But that middle battle is awesome. Papa, Tarpany, Big Reg, Paulo, Madison, Hudson, Hopgood. It's a big battle there. And rough return for Big Red off the bench last week. Couple errors. Certainly hoping he'll be fired up for this one. So again, and I've said it for most games, I really do think this is a 50-50 game, another one that could be a less than 12.5, and it's reflected with bluebet.com.au. Raiders, slight favourites at home, $1.80. $2 the Eels, -1.5 is the line. Schiller, good value last week, $2.25. Timoko, $2.75. Panasini, $3.50 on the flip. I think Brown and Lane are the two that I'd sort of be looking at that left-hand side together. Let's come up with something. Brown is fives. $5.50 is there for Lane. But a lot of flip-the-coin games so far. And it's been the beauty. Like, things looked a little bit clear-cut with some of the results early, but then we had a bunch of upsets, and then we've had some more to follow up on the weekend. I don't know about everyone else's tip, but I think I only got four of 8. Picked a couple of try scorers, which is always nice, but certainly a rough week in the head-to-heads, and a couple of teams after a good start, having a bit of an ebb and a flow. A couple of teams getting results off the back of a couple of bad weeks, and the only winless team remaining still is the Titans. So the NRL, as always, it's delivering. It's been great, and another awesome week ahead here. So fingers crossed to belt around and we can get some cash. But all those odds in that preview, thanks to bluebet.com.au. If you're going to have a bet with anyone, make sure you do it with the True Boo Bookie. Download the app today and visit the website. And thanks to them for supporting the charity account this year. Hopefully be able to add to the balance this week and find a winner for our potential charity for the 2024 season. And thank you to penrithsolar.com.au. 1800 20 29 30. Contact Jake and the team there. Let them help you, your family, your back pocket, and become the real winner this season with the help of solar energy. That's me, Lewis, wrapped up on the solo review and preview. As I said, hopefully back to normal next week with a Monday and Wednesday shows. But off the back of the long weekend and 5 days of excellent football, hope everyone had a great weekend with family and friends. Short week here, leading back into what will hopefully be another belter weekend of football. Can't wait. And for now, enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.